More of Lake Effect Now on WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Bonnie North. With a baseball team known as the Brewers and a nickname paying homage to the city's alcohol-fueled history, it should come as no surprise that Milwaukee is a big drinking town. So when the staff of Milwaukee Magazine sat down to hammer out their ultimate guide to drinking in Milwaukee, there were more than a few contentious categories.
Ann Christensen is the senior editor and dining critic at the magazine and one of the esteemed panelists judging the best cocktails in Milwaukee. Ann, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you for having me.
For you, what are the defining features of a good cocktail?
Well, when we sat down and were trying to hash out just exactly those details, you know, we were thinking, well, gosh, there's so many things to consider here. I mean, do we find the definitive old-fashioned, the very best Cosmo, the best martini? And then we just sort of thought, well, no, let's not get super specific about certain types. Let's just look around for some of the most delicious and interesting and the really trailblazing types of cocktails. Although you'll find some in this list that are along the lines of like an old fashioned, you know, might be a version of that. Or we have one that is, it's a tequila-based drink that is not a margarita, but they use grapefruit juice, you know?
Yeah.
So these sort of more known types of cocktails, I guess, but people putting a different spin on them, you know? So it can be really daunting when you look at it from the very beginning and you think, how are we going to do this? Is this even doable? I would say there are so many, many, many more cocktails that this could have been a list of 100, I guess. But we kind of like narrowed it down to some of the really cool ones that are being done out there.
So the ones that are more inventive.
Yeah, right. I mean, maybe they're making their bitters in-house. They're doing infusions. I mean, the flavors are just really, really well balanced. So you know that you've got a mixologist or a bartender that really knows how to make a good tasting cocktail, something that really works. Has someone who has a great palate.
So as you said, you do have some old standards. You have like a Sazerac. You do have an old fashioned, I would guess, a pretty contentious category at the old fashions because
yeah.
People have such big opinions on them.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not a huge whiskey drinker, but
right.
I know like you can, of course, do it sweet. You can do it more sour.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose the old fashioned at the Jazz Estate?
First of all, they have three versions of an old-fashioned there. They do one that's based on the Bryant's version. Bryant's is their sister bar. They do a version that's rather a Wisconsin old-fashioned, which is a brandy old-fashioned, right? And that's sweet. And then they do one that's really off the wall that has coffee in it. To me, that's one of the most interesting old-fashions I've ever had. To me, I mean, Bryant's is like an institution. They're sort of that foundational place where they have these incredible people that create cocktails there. But those old-fashions are just really, really outstanding. I mean, you can go anywhere and get an old-fashioned. See, that's the real thing. I mean, like, if you go to a bar and they've got brandy or they've got bourbon or they got whiskey and they got sweet or they've got a sour mixer or something, pretty much any of them can put that together and give you an olive or a maraschino cherry. But if somebody's really putting some thought into this, that's what we were looking for, hence the Jazz Estate. I mean, I know this is probably fighting words for a lot of people because, as you said, it's such a complex topic. And in fact, we did our own rating of the best old fashions. We had, not in this story, but two categories, sweet and sour. And that was a story we did like a year ago. And we are sort of like posting the results of that again on our website, and it went mad on traffic. I mean, people just went crazy. So there clearly is an interest in that, and everybody does have an opinion. But, you know, try the Jazz Estate. It's really interesting. Because the way I look at it with that version is if you're going to do Korbel and you're going to do, you know, the sweet mixer and you're going to have the cherry, okay, that's kind of standard. It's hard to really, like, do anything different with that. But they've got three versions, right? They've got the sour, and then they do this one where they're really trying to push it a little bit with the coffee. So, I don't know. I give them a lot of credit for that. I think it's a really cool thing they're doing.
Yeah. What are some of the more inventive cocktails that ended up on this list?
Well, when we were first looking at cocktails, one of the places we were looking at was Dock 18, which is a really interesting little cocktail lab that was run by the Bitter Cube guys. They do this whole line of Milwaukee-based bitters. They have now taken that on the road and are doing a pop-up version of this. If you ever have the opportunity to go to a pop-up event that's run by Bitter Cubes, Doc 18, do it. Because these guys are, I mean, they're not only using their own bitters, but they're using really interesting botanicals, infusions. They might be lighting something on fire. There's so much thought and effort and creativity put into a cocktail. However, that isn't the only thing that we looked for in a cocktail. You know, for instance, what was nice about this list is the Cosmo at Elsa's. We included that. I don't think they've changed the recipe in, I don't know, 30 years. But those people, they nailed that cocktail. They just crushed it. I mean, that Cosmo is like the perfect Sex and the City Cosmo. I mean, you're not going to find another one like it. I was really into, there's a restaurant and bar in the Shorecrest Hotel called Supper. They do a lot of like retro style cocktails. That's the real trend here, is this idea of retro. And even when you, if you look at the spread that we do, you know, everything's kind of served in these old tumblers or those old champagne glasses. There's such an interest in that now, in that old, that very 1950s, 1940s idea of cocktails, and even into the 60s and 70s, into the Harvey Wallbangers and things like that. Supper has this really interesting take on, well, they have a number of different retro cocktails. This particular one is called a New York Sour. But what's really interesting about it is they use this Old Forester bourbon, and it's mixed with lemon and then sweet sour. They add red wine to it. And the way they mix this cocktail, the red wine floats on the top of the glass. But before you drink it, you use your straw and you kind of stir it up. There's something just really amazing about what happens to those flavors once you stir them up. So I don't know. That's an example of something that's a little bit more retro, but they're using their own idea. What red wine they want to use, the sour mix that they like, the bourbon that they like. So it adds sort of an interesting blend to it.
As you said, there are a lot of these retro cocktails that ended up on the list.
Yeah.
And when we talk about wine, we so often talk about like old world wine and new world wine. Mm-hmm. Is there an old world cocktail and a new world cocktail? Are there big differences in yeah. the more modern cocktails versus the older ones?
I don't know if that's true. I mean, they say that the Sazerac is one of the oldest cocktails ever created, like in the early 1800s in New Orleans. And we do have a Sazerac on this list. I'm a fan of them. I think they're just really classic and not too complicated. They have a little bit of absinthe on the rim. The more modern cocktails, I guess, in my opinion, seem to be oftentimes reinterpretations of old cocktails.
Okay.
Because I think it's hard to get away from, first of all, you're going to start with the main spirits, you know, vodka, whiskey, gin, you know, and then you're going to have your kind of ancillary spirits that you're going to mix with it, and then maybe a sweet and sour, something along those lines. I think maybe the one thing about modern cocktails is maybe some of the different ways that people are infusing them, you know, whether they're infusing the spirits with some sort of flavor or a fruit or an herb, or they're making an atomizer and spraying something in there. And then people are lighting things on fire, or they're using smoke sticks to actually add sort of this, like almost a cedar smell to it. So I think that's what makes the modern. I think it's some of those flourishes. That's, to me, what defines it. I think the classic ones are the old ones. They don't have a lot. Like a Negroni, to me, it was like dominated by this is Campari. You know, it's just, it doesn't need a lot of flourishes or bells and whistles. I think, you know, I'll probably get someone shooting me down for this, but I do think the modern cocktails tend to have a little bit more of the bells and whistles.
What were some of the more, as you were going through the different cocktails, what were some of the more contentious picks that made it onto the list, just among your staff?
Yeah, we definitely had ones that dropped out, and we definitely had ones that we debated. For instance, like a Moscow Mule. I'm not even sure that part of me sort of thought, well, you know, a Moscow Mule is essentially, you know, ginger beer and vodka. It's not that unusual, right? Clearly, you want it served really cold. You want, you know, the right amount of lime juice in it. You want some fresh mint in there. It should be served in a copper mug. So we debated inserting a classic like that on the list when a lot of people will do a Moscow Mule and a lot of people will do it well. And they'll do it in the very classic way and it's served exactly the way it's supposed to. But the person that actually had that particular Moscow Mule, I think, made a really good argument for it because it's at Great Lakes Distillery and it uses their vodka. They used a very specific ginger beer. I mean, everything about it was kind of Milwaukee-ized. So I think that one was a situation where we thought, okay, that makes it a little more unusual. It isn't just your basic vodka. It isn't Tito's or something. It isn't, you know, Absolut and then with, you know, some kind of random ginger beer. This one is really localized. And I think that made it more legit, I guess.
Yeah.
And the ginger beer is made, as I said, it's made locally by Top Note Tonics, which makes this has this great line of tonics, too.
The article itself or the piece itself is really far-reaching. You get into, you know, the best beer bars, you get into the best wine shops, you get into a lot of different categories, really all revolving around drinking. One of the more unusual ones that I picked up on was you had a whole piece on the Tom and Jerry. And when I mentioned this to my colleagues, many of whom are from the East, they went, I don't know what that drink is. For people who might be in the audience and might not know a Tom and Jerry.
A Tom and Jerry, I mean, I guess until we had our, we have a guy who writes about cocktails for us. He's from Milwaukee, but he's actually a nationally known cocktail expert. I didn't realize that the Tom and Jerry was a Wisconsin thing, but I grew up with a grandma that always had punch bowls. And I think that's one of the telltale signs that maybe someone entertained in your family and had made a Tom and Jerry. But I didn't realize how common it was in Wisconsin because I'm not accustomed to drinking cocktails that have eggs and sugar and cream and are served warm like that and have booze in them and are served during the holidays. But it's sort of like a hot toddy. Once it starts getting cold, people love it. This particular drink is very similar to eggnog, except it's boozy and it's served warm. So you're going to drink it in a mug, and there are actually different explanations how it actually got its name. And some people think of Tom and Jerry, the cartoon characters. I mean, I think there are stories everywhere. Where did this actually come? And I don't know if there is a definitive explanation for where it came from. So this particular story was a little bit about the author reminiscing about his own experiences with it. Let's say you know it's the holiday season now and we're almost into winter and you want to go get one. Where do you go? Where can you get a really traditional one? You know, you can go to the Packing House, which is like this very classic kind of supper clubby steak place right by the airport, or you can go someplace like the Phoenix Cocktail Lounge, which is over on Jefferson, very modern. They're doing some really interesting, very, for lack of a better word, avant-garde cocktails, but they do a traditional Tom and Jerry's. So it's one of those things where I think, yeah, maybe if you're not from Wisconsin, kind of like if you're not from Wisconsin, you think, why would I drink a Wisconsin old fashioned? Why would I want that? It is what it is. Does it sound appealing to you? This sort of boozy.
I've had a Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
My mom actually will buy the batter around Christmas.
Oh.
You can buy a batter, a ready-made batter for a Tom and Jerry. My mom, who doesn't actually drink, will make them.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. They're interesting. I don't know. It's definitely a unique cocktail.
Yeah.
And indicative, I would say, of the cocktails. I mean, you mentioned, of course, as we have a lot in this conversation, old fashions. A lot of the Wisconsin cocktails do seem to skew sweet.
Oh, yeah.
And Tom and Jerry definitely fits into that category.
Rich and sweet. Yeah. I remember the first time I had hot buttered rum and I thought, I don't know about this. This is like, and I don't know that I want more than one of these, you know? I mean, it's a very, almost like a special occasion drink. But, you know, like I said, that's a very, like, locked in time type of cocktail, I think. I mean, what your mom is doing is very, I think that's very retro, like 40s, 50s, you know what I mean? And would she serve it in a punch bowl? Would she do that?
She doesn't because she's generally making it for me and my sister.
Oh, okay. So not for a crowd.
Not for a crowd.
Okay.
But I think she has. I think at parties she's made a large kind of vat of Tom and Jerry's.
Yeah. Well, I have to say as a posthumous, one of the best places that had it was Karl Rasch's, the German restaurant, which is no more. They had a really nice version of it. And it was such a festive place to go during holidays too, and actually sit at the bar and have this. And also Von Trier, which is going through a new ownership. And so they're going to be closed for a little bit and then reopen. But they do Tom and Jerry's as well. So,
all right. So if you're looking for a Tom and Jerry...
Yes.
You have a lot of options in Milwaukee.
Or Tom and Jerry's, which I keep wanting to say for some reason. I don't know. I mean, I think it is singular, a Tom and Jerry. So there you go.
But if you have multiple.
Right.
All right. Well, Anne, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Anne Christensen is a senior editor and dining critic at Milwaukee Magazine. For more on their ultimate Milwaukee drinking guide, you can head to wuwm.com. With cocktails for two.